the last 35 days or so have been a gut check for Americans that we do not have a true culture of preparedness in this country. And we got a lot of work to do, whether it's in education and being ready. It's not just saying, hey, have 3 days worth of supplies ready to go. It's greater than that. It's also having the finances and the savings to be able to overcome simple emergencies. We have to hit the reset button and create a true culture of preparedness, starting at a very young age and filtering all the way up.
I got news. We don't have time to wait. Starting from a young age and filtering up, we got to do it now. We have to work rapidly towards building self-sufficient communities of resilient individuals. This is Christian bringing you the Ice Age Farmer podcast, mapping a path forward, building self-sufficient, resilient communities, and sharing knowledge in the grand solar minimum. Today is Friday, September 29th, and this is episode 15. Today, as we suffer through the tail of the level 3 geomagnetic solar storm, there are several things that I think it's important for us to talk about. We're going to kick it off with some news, and then we're going to cover the change of tone, the criminalization of dissent, about which I did a full video already, but it's so important that I want to talk about it again. Just the idea that it could be illegal to have this podcast is obviously something that needs to be talked about. Then we'll be getting into an icebreaker. I'd like to share with you a Washington Times opinion piece by Fred Singer, who did an awesome job of writing some truth up and getting it into the opinion section there at the Washington Times. So I'll share parts of that with you just to celebrate that he did so. Then we'll be talking about the daily steps that folks in the Ice Age farmer community are taking. How are they bringing themselves, how are we taking ourselves every day closer to self-sufficient? I'll be speaking a little bit to some of the stuff I do here with the cricket farm, and then some updates on the wiki, as well as hearing from a lot of folks, mostly who are doing preservation. It is the season for harvesting and preserving things, and so that's what everyone is out there working on. And then we'll cover some viewer feedback. I heard from someone about their crop losses that I'd like to share, someone in California here. I got some feedback on the oyster mushrooms videos, which is helpful, and that I'd like to share. A bit of coverage on herbs and health and some tires. Some great feedback across the board there. And finally, we will take a question for a viewer question, which was from Paul, who asked, what do I feed my fish for aquaponics system? And that turns out to be a very interesting answer. In fact, I have a whole wiki page on the Ice Age Farmer wiki about that. And we'll talk about that a bit. All right, before we do all that, I'd like to challenge you to do something, to go do something that you don't know how to do yet, to try it, to take a daily step, a step today towards self-sufficiency, some skill you don't know yet or don't think you can learn. Reach across to people that you see doing it. I mean, you can learn basically anything on YouTube at this point, or reach across generations, join together. It is time to use our relationships, and you know, technology can help to bridge that gap, but do something interesting today and take a video of yourself doing it. Do a video of your backyard garden or of your aquaponics system or of your vertical, whatever it is you're working on, and as soon as you see someone else do it, you say, hey, I can do that too. You didn't really know that you could, but when you see someone else do it, when you hear about it, when you read a blog about how it's working for someone else, we inspire each other. And so the biggest message that I can take, that I hope you take today, and that's why I share it up front, is do something and share what you're doing. Share it with other people. Get involved in your communities. Be involved with each other. Tell your story. Tell me your story, and I'll share your story with others. That's just my thoughts. Let's build this community of solutions. All right, before we get to the news section, I just want to add, if you've not checked out the interview I did with Diamond from the Oppenheimer Ranch Project, go ahead and do so. It was episode 14. He is a really knowledgeable guy, and we got to have some great conversations. Actually, speaking of Diamond, he did a video also, which sort of added his geologist's perspective on why we've seen some of the water receding from the coastlines, especially during the hurricanes. I mentioned this because it was sort of an open question that I had posed saying that this isn't something that we usually see with hurricanes in the past. And so there were several people pointing out that this doesn't seem like a normal, like, what's going on here? And we'd left that question open. So I wanted to mention that he had posted a video with an explanation involving increased subduction between the plates due to the grand solar minimum. But I'll leave a link in the show notes to his explanation, as it will be better than mine. And with that, let's get to the news. All right, as we get into the news, I will remind folks that I keep a running tally of everything that I see that's related to the grand solar minimum on my Twitter feed, which is twitter.com/iceagefarmer. I've started using a little subset of hashtags so that we can quickly relate the headlines that we're seeing to the different aspects, the different symptoms, the different causes underlying the things that I'm tweeting about. So it's not just random, hey, there's a volcano. It's a, yes, this is consistent with the uptick in seismic and volcanic activity that we expect at this point in the solar cycle, and given the energies we're getting or not getting from the sun at the moment, like right now. So if you are interested in watching that full stream of stuff, then go ahead and check out twitter.com/iceagefarmer. Having said that, I would ask where to start, except that I know where to start, and that is with thoughts and prayers for John Casey, who is, of course, a former NASA scientist and a pioneer in bringing this message of the grand solar minimum and the global cooling that's expected, as well as the seismic devastation, frankly, to public knowledge. And so I think we want to, you know, after his stroke, just keep him in our thoughts and prayers. And beyond that, as we're in the middle of these extreme few weeks of activity, the latest being this level 3 geomagnetic storm, multiple volcanoes erupting in response. We see Amadeus, more like the central flight coordinators that goes down, which takes down airlines across the globe, grounding flights. And we know, of course, that the power grid has been well taken care of, so that this kind of thing is not going to happen in the event of a solar activity. Oh, I'm sorry, what's that? I've got former CIA Director Jim Woolsey here tapping my shoulder. He wants to say something.
So we have a structure of the grid and those things that are need to be done in order to protect it that is almost entirely dysfunctional. Nobody is really in charge of security for the grid, and no single intelligence with a staff that is planning how to deal with these threats as they come up is in place. They don't exist. Consequently, as vulnerabilities come about, we are not in a position to respond really at all, much less promptly. And create some very serious problems.
Well, indeed it does, Jim, because in 2013 we had a congresswoman who was sitting on the Department of Homeland Security say there's a 100% chance of a severe geomagnetic event that's capable of crippling our grid. 100% chance. I think that's just guessing, that's a pretty good one. And that, not to mention Janet Napolitano, the former head of DHS, on her way out, warning that there'll be what she called it a cyber attack, but also an unprecedented natural disaster, the likes of which the nation has ever seen. This is also in 2013. But are we now approaching? Are we now seeing the sun popping off these things that they knew would be coming as we entered the minimum? And it's just basically a matter of time. I think there's a chance that, yes, we are basically just teetering on the edge here, and there's not much time. And that is why we have to take steps towards self-sufficiency every day. We have to move in that direction every day. Please, let us brace for that worst-case scenario, but absolutely plan and hope for a better case, a soft landing. All right, we owe it to Irma to take a glance at the massive crop losses that were happening there. Avocados really decimated by that storm, as well as citrus, up to 50 to 70% of the citrus crop loss. This is on top of the peach loss throughout the U.S. South. these are, folks, fruit prices are going up. It's time to start planting those fruit trees. And a hat tip to Anita, who alerted me to this article about the California tomato crop being lighter than expected. And as well, specifically speaking to several farmers who are saying that because yields were low, this will be their last year planting tomatoes. So plant the fruit trees, and you better start growing your tomatoes as well. In fact, start growing your own food, folks. It's a theme here. A massive storm in Puerto Rico, warning that parts of the grid might not be able to get power back for up to a year. We'll see how that actually goes. There are non-trivial crop losses going on due to significant storms in India as well. And again, after last month having the same thing happen, Mumbai experiencing extreme rainfall and massive flooding, more than a month's worth in 24 hours, with some fatalities there. We also have growing evidence of the growing season shrinking. Fortunately, ADAPT 2030 continues to cover the way that there's snow across the northern hemisphere early, so the growing season is just coming to an end. Beyond the volcanoes, there are also major earthquakes along the Ring of Fire, including some now off the coast of California. It's getting pretty wild out there. And then I've already spoken a lot to the charged atmosphere, to the solar wind, the solar storm, the geomagnetic storm that we've been experiencing, and how secure we can feel about our own electrical grid here at home. The volcanoes have just been off the charts. We've got 5 new ones. Bali, the most, I think, attention, with 50,000 people evacuated. It's astounding to watch what's going on down there. All of this, of course, on the GSM Volcano hashtag. You can follow along on Twitter. And then I also wanted to mention, because sometimes we underplay the idea of epidemics or plagues coming back in grand solar minima as they have in the past, or even laugh at the idea. But I think the fact is, when food is low and people are tired, immunosuppressed individuals, especially if they don't have access to clean water, which is one of the first things that is a problem in a disaster situation, or if the grid is gone down and the pumps aren't working and you depend on municipal water, it doesn't take much, is my point. It does not take much for your immune system to be compromised. And I think Yemen's now 5-month battle with cholera is an unfortunate demonstration and reminder of this, and that if you project what this looks like when there are similar problems. I mean, look at the grid just went down in Puerto Rico, and we'll see if, as in Haiti before, these things become a problem. All right, I put out a video about this. They are trying to criminalize any dissent of global warming. So if you talk about that agenda not being the case, then that's, you know, you could potentially be fined or imprisoned. And I just have to, I don't want to repeat that again in this one. I'd rather just go on to new information. But I do have to ring that bell again, because it stresses the importance of us having these conversations, even with strangers, and seeding this knowledge out now before this criminalization happens. This is, the war has already begun, whether or not we would like that to be the case. And the war has been declared, and we better start fighting it. All right, now for the icebreaker segment, I'd like to share an opinion piece that made its way into the Washington Times. This by S. Fred Singer was published Tuesday, September 12th, 2017. The headline, Preventing the Other Climate Catastrophe. Periodic global cooling might be thwarted by geoengineering. And I just find it actually fascinating that this made it to be published at all, frankly, but also that it combines two different memes that they're not supposed to see in mainstream media. One is geoengineering, and the other is global cooling. So I wanted to highlight a couple pieces from Singer's piece, because I think it's wonderful. I think it's just absolutely admirable that this man has taken the time to write this piece and put it out to as many publishers as who knows to how many people he sent it before one was putting it in their publication. And he has successfully shifted the Overton window for some number of people that are reading it from his piece. climate cooling, as opposed to warming, presents serious problems for humanity. As cooling causes agriculture to fail, most of the world's population will starve, and we will be reduced from its present level to about 1 million hunting animals and collecting nuts and seeds for sustenance. This has happened before during the Ice Ages, when nomadic bands of prehistoric humans had to shelter in caves for protection from the cold and had to rely on uncertain supplies of food. Now, I just want to interject there. It doesn't sound from that immediate intro that he believes we can have a soft landing here, that we can use communities and build technologies and solutions that make this helpful. But I'm just going to continue reading from his piece. We need to distinguish between two kinds of climate cooling events. The first kind is astronomical, as studied by the Serbian astronomer Milankovitch, and determined by the orbit of the Earth in the solar system and the obliquity and precession of the spin axis. There's very little we can do about that. In the past 2 to 3 million years, we've experienced about 20 of these glaciations, typically lasting 100,000 years, interrupted by interglacial warm periods of about 10,000 years. We've been in our present interglacial, which is called the Holocene, for about 10,000 years, and many people think we're due for another glaciation within a few decades or centuries. Some disagree and think that the Holocene may last longer, about 45,000 years. The second kind of cooling is controlled by solar activity and has a short period of 1,000 to 1,500 years. Our civilization experienced what we call the Little Ice Age from about 1400 to 1800 AD. The cooling was severe enough to destroy agriculture and the budding civilization in southern Greenland. We observed serious effects of the cooling in Europe when harvests failed and people starved. Epidemics caused additional deaths. Since about 1850, the climate has been recovering from the Little Ice Age, showing some warming. In a nutshell, as opposed to global warming, global cooling is a very real problem for a number of reasons. Based on the historic past, we can be sure that cooling will occur again, and maybe very soon. When it does occur, it will have serious effects on agriculture and lead to mass starvation. And then his final thought, interestingly, unlike for warming, geoengineering against cooling seems physically possible, relatively inexpensive, and environmentally benign. And I have no idea on what basis he would conclude that it would be environmental. I mean, that's, yeah, so there it is. That is the piece that I wanted to share. And again, the awesome part about this is that he got some of these concepts out there into the dialogue, and that as I opened this episode today is what I'm challenging you to do. Go out and start these conversations. Go do self-sufficient things and film yourself doing them and share it with me, and we will inspire others to do the same. And this organic movement will grow and we'll have a softer landing. Every day we take these steps, the landing will get softer. Speaking of every day taking steps, let's get to our daily steps. It's that time. When we look at what folks in the Ice Age farmer community are doing to increase their own resilience, and as I already tipped the hat earlier, it is that time of year. Everyone right now that I'm hearing from is storing, is harvesting, is canning, is preserving, is saving seeds. I could tell you many similar stories from folks in the community that have to do with those things, but a couple of highlights. Mountain MoMA made Manchego cheese, which really stood out. She's been working on her health and fitness and was able to lose 5 pounds. Nice. Saint Wood worked up and canned 7 quarts of his tomato juice recipe. Tomorrow he has to work up more pickled peppers. Still have 4 to 5 pounds of hot wax peppers. Wow. That's, some are starting to go bad, so you got to get them used up. Yep. Carl. Stored food rotation and gun cleaning in the armory. Diesel added for the generator. New helper getting some OJT. Bought a half cord of softwood close, and then restacked my hard eucalyptus wood out back. MJ Witt. He's going to town on his new site. Congrats on the new property. Lots to do setting up the new Holdfast. I've been very busy setting up the new storage cistern, stairs, shelves, moving the supplies in, etc. Ordered a new propane-powered Jenny and poured the pad for it, making an appointment for my concealed permit. Nice. Also bought a canning rig and trying my head at some blackberry jam, apples, sauce, and pickles. Next on the list, a major overhaul and improvements to the storage shed. All right, quite the renaissance man, MJ Witt, which is what we all are. We are all Ice Age farmers, refinding these skills and sharing them with each other. It's great. I love to hear from these stories. What are you doing? Let me know. Send me information via the comments below or to iceagefarmer@gmail.com if you want to be a little more hush-hush about it. But let's share out the information of what we're doing, what steps we are taking today to ensure our food security tomorrow. On my front, as you can hear in the background, I have been building a cricket farm, and those guys have kept me not busy, but at least attentive to them. And then since I was on bed rest for a bit there earlier, I went to town on the wiki, the Ice Age Farmer wiki, from which a lot of this episode has been served, actually, and some of the screenshots you saw earlier were there. I started adding, actually, some problem-specific sections, so this is interesting. For example, you can drill down into anxiety or diabetes from sections that will link to solutions for these things that will be available in a grand solar minimum scenario, like what thoughts you might have on that as a community. All right, with that, let's get to some viewer feedback from Joe Primal. Not the best of news from Joe. He is an almond farmer in California, and he lost half his crop to a plague of moths. They lay worms in the nuts, like we've seen. We also had trouble getting our tomatoes to set fruit because of cold nighttime temperatures. Sorry to hear about that, Joe, especially, man. I had actually heard that almonds farmers were doing well in California this year because of the excessive rains, that the more water, the more almonds. So I'm really sorry to hear that you lost half your crop. Okay, a few tips on the oyster mushrooms. I had posted some information about that some of those literally finally bearing fruit for me on that project. From Joseph Gill, oysters are pretty easygoing mushrooms. Personally, I bought a pre-inoculated log from a reliable vendor to start. I believe the substrate that they grew in was hardwood sawdust-based. I've had amazing success with it. I've had 4 or 5 flushes now. The latest flush was after I let my block dry out heavily. I just soaked it a week, refrigerated it a week, and put it back into the fruiting chamber, and they just flat out grew. And then he recommends, check out Paul Stamen's mushroom growing books. That information has been priceless. It's a good tip there. And another, just a couple of quick things, and check me on this first one, but oyster mushrooms should be cooked prior to eating, otherwise they can cause an upset stomach. I haven't done that and haven't had a problem. Second, those plugs that you used to grow your oyster mushrooms are intended to be put into wooden logs. Obviously, it does work the way you did it, but that's probably one of the reasons it took so long. If you get loose spore and shake it in the bag, you'll have faster results. I'm glad you're growing mushrooms. That's awesome. Also, consider growing shiitakes. They have a great source of vitamin D. As the amount of sunlight decreases, we will need more of that. And that's exactly why, it's exactly what motivates the mushrooms. So thanks for the tips on the oyster mushrooms from those two mushroom growers there. Also got a tip from an herbalist who mentions, I keep stinging nettle tincture on hand because I have a severe fire ant allergy. I have found that if I use it fairly quick, it works better than over-the-counter antihistamines. And then I put a compress of moistened yarrow on the bite. With this combination, I have no need for an EpiPen. Good to hear, because those things are expensive. And then on health in general, by the way, all these sorts of tips are being actively added to the Ice Age Farmer Wiki. So there's now a stinging nettle section there with this, with that tip in there. On managing your own health, one caring viewer wrote in response to my hospitalization, and I very much agree with his or her philosophy. If one has one of various body conditions that are managed by different medications, the availability of which would be gone along with centralized electric grid, one should at least experiment with getting rid of the condition now by diet alone. Eat the correct foods for your body. He's so right. It's different for everyone, and you have to pay attention to your body. I have a pinched vagus nerve, he continues, that shows up in breathing, digestion, heart rate, blood pressure, etc. Doctors want to prescribe a chemical for each of those different symptoms, facets. I have a chiropractor working on the pinched part of the nerve. I have handled the tachycardia, the blood pressure, and the small intestine through herbs and diet. That sort of information is presently available on probably at least 1,000 different websites. Just find the stuff that works for you. And again, do it now. This is part of taking these steps now while the resources are available. Save the chemical doctors, he concludes, for emergency first aid situations, broken bones, wounds. That's what they're the best in the world at, but not the sick care. Yes, I very much agree with his philosophy. And finally, one person writes in on tires, because we had mentioned that they are a useful resource for building Earthship-style buildings. He writes, "My wife had to get one of the tires on our car replaced today. In the process, she ends up seeing a room full of bad tires in the shop. She asks the owner, who is the one doing the job, by the way, 'Have you ever heard of the Earthship?' The gentleman says, 'Yeah.' And he says, 'You can have all the tires in that room for free. It's refilled every month.' So that's super cool. I thought I'd share that with you. Thanks for sharing that. Indeed, that's great to know that there are shops who are, I mean, I think at places they actually have to pay a fee when they're throwing away tires. So it doesn't entirely surprise me that there are folks from whom we can readily access resources like well-worn recycling tires. And with that, let's get to the viewer question of the day, which also happens to be involving the item of the day. The question is from Paul, who asks, 'What do you feed your fish?' This turns out, while it sounds like a simple question, to be a particularly interesting answer. In fact, I have, for some time, already a wiki page dedicated to aquaponic fish food, and I'm doing experiments to see exactly with what combination of biological components I can reach a fully self-sufficient level of protein production to fuel the aquaponics and thus the greens. And I think there may be something in there between earthworms and black soldier fly larvae, BSFLs, duckweed. It's just a fun experiment. But as well, I certainly currently use an aquaponics-specific feed that has specifically some protein, good levels of protein and nutrition for the fish, and then plus extra nutrition and trace elements on top of that available for the plants. And it's made from ingredients I like. I will link to the nutrition. I took a picture of the front of it with the nutrition info and have that up on the wiki as well under aquaponic fish food. But I'll link to that in the show notes. And then I'll also link to the item on Amazon. It's only $12 for 2 pounds, which indeed will last you some months. It'll last you a while if you're running a smaller system with, I don't know, 3 to 6 fish. I'll also promise, as always, to keep that wiki page updated as my experiment evolves. It's taking me time to locate all of the studies that are relevant. Some show that you can grow fish up to, with using a diet of black soldier fly larvae, up to 25%, but above that, they start losing body mass and growth rate. So like finding that is like, okay, so that's where the black soldier fly larva caps out. And beyond that, we have to start mixing in the duckweed. But the duckweed always comes from the nitrates from my aquaponics. So I don't want to take too much duckweed, right? That sort of defeats the purpose. Then it's just a closed loop and we're not producing food for them. We want to produce energy coming off this thing for us. So it's a fun system to dial in, and that's all part of the spirit of what this experiment is about. And it's also why I hope many people are doing their own experiments, because there's a good chance I'm not going to get to the global maximum, to the solution that's going to work for all of us. So thanks for that question, Paul. As always, send me your questions if you have any, iceagefarmer@gmail.com. One final thought, just because we looked and thought about the reality that our power grid is, and on it, our civilization is just literally teetering on the edge right now, and is having near misses with the sun on such a frequent basis that it's difficult. It's honestly difficult to think about and to be honest with oneself about. So I found these most basic questions, and I think they're questions we can ask ourselves, because we can always upgrade our answers to them, improve. We can always work at those. That's what the daily steps are about. But here's a basic set of questions that I'm going to put on screen, and you can share these with folks around you just to put these things top of mind for them. How would you get your food if the grocery stores are closed? How would you cook your food if you're able to acquire it and the grid is down? What will happen to the perishable food in your fridge and your freezer? How will you heat or cool your home if you're in an area where you need to do that? What will you use for light once a few candles run out? How will you transport yourself if your vehicle isn't running? Whether that's because of an EMP or no gas, whatever. If the grid goes down, you can't pump gas. What will you drink and wash with if the municipal water supply is no longer providing water, or if the pump on your well runs on electricity? These are some of the most basic questions, and I think it's highly advisable, given the activity we're seeing from the sun and the effects it's having on our planet, that we arm ourselves with answers to these questions, and that we improve our family's security, including food security, every day. Every day we work on this. And remember, that next $20 might be best spent on zip ties and duct tape and bungee cords, which is going to go a lot farther than some of the crazier Faraday cage preps you might start thinking about. At any rate, with that, this has been, I think, a lot of things to take in today, and we'll leave it here. This has been episode 15, and I hope you enjoyed it. If you do, please consider supporting my work. Hit the wiki at wiki.iceagefarmer.com/help to see how you can help the show. There are tons of ways to contribute, including becoming a supporter on Patreon. I'd love to thank my Patreon supporters, which is patreon.com/iceagefarmer. And with that, this has been Christian with episode 15 of the Ice Age Farmer podcast, mapping a path forward to prosperity, building self-sufficient, resilient communities, and sharing knowledge in the grand solar minimum. And remember my challenge: go do something. Let's go do great things, folks.